Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you can join us once again. And if you would be so kind as to sit through the opening disclosure once again, or disclaimer, I want to remind listeners that just because we talk about certain tax strategies or certain tax news, as the case may be, certain real estate private partnership opportunities or markets or trends, it doesn't necessarily mean that information is something appropriate for your facts and circumstances. Very well may be. We hope there's some connection there, but we would always suggest that you speak with your existing group of advisors, accounting, legal, tax, real estate, investment advisors. What have I left off? Is that the list? Anyway, to make sure that you understood what you heard, and then let them help you assess whether or not the information is accurate, and more importantly, whether or not it actually applies to your facts and circumstances. Let's see. I think we can go ahead and go to the news. I've added quite a few articles since our show this past Friday. And if you want to tune in or take a look at those articles real time with us, or if you want to go back and look at them when you've got more leisure, you can go to our Be a Planner Show .com site. It's a companion site to the BeAPlanner.com site, or BeAPlanner.com. There's no the on the front. And you can see those articles on the resources page and under news. And it's, you know, I read a lot of news sites over the week, and it's amazing what's out there for the taking, and I do my best to give you a funnel to go right to the good stuff. Of course, that's just the portion that I see. That you may, if you do this on your own, if you got a few days to spend each week, you might come up with some other sources that give you similar or even better information, although the sources I track are the predominant, or the dominant rather, commercial real estate news and or tax news. And then occasionally we look at some kind of off topic articles, which the first article on my list on the news page would fall into that category. It is titled "Handyman Turned Squatter Hunter Says Atlanta Squatter Crisis Terrorist Act is a Terrorist Act." I guess they let off the "is" or left off the "is." It's a terrorist act, in quotes, that calls for National Guard. Now, I don't know how many of you happened to catch any of the evidentiary hearing this week in Georgia with district attorney there. She is quite a character, I think would be the term maybe my mother might use, someone of her generation. But if any of you saw that testimony, you can understand why this caught my eye. It's like Atlanta is, I don't know any better word, there's something in the water there, maybe? I don't know. There's some cuckoo folks there, and starts kind of at the top. I can't imagine a district attorney having as little to offer in terms of substance as what it appears Ms. Fannie Willis, I know some people refer to as Fanny. I think she uses the word Fannie. But boy, what a series of stories she's put together with her, I guess, former boyfriend now, after what she said during her testimony. It's amazing, some of the stuff they've concocted. It's almost like, you know, your kids, when they're 5 and 6 years old, some of the things they made up to get out of trouble. And it looks like that's what's going on with these lawyers. It would be funny if it wasn't so sad. But in any event, so also in the same area, and again, this may be in the water there, but and I'd seen some references to this on some news sites before. This was on Fox News, which I don't know. Fox has gotten to where you almost can't trust them any more than you can, you know, the MSDNC or MSCNBC. I'm sorry. But in any event, handyman turned squatter hunter said squatting laws need to be reclassified as invasion or terrorist act, as unwanted residents continue to wreak havoc on Atlanta area homes or houses, turning homes into drug and prostitution dens. And if we were to criminalize it, this is a quote, if we were to criminalize it, that would enable us to send in the National Guard to sweep that whole neighborhood and get those 1,200 houses clear. Apparently there's one subdivision there of 1,200 homes that's got a lot of squatters in it. But anyway, that was a quote by Flash Shelton. That's what they say the name is. That's an interesting name for a person. Founder of the United Handyman Association and SquatterHunters.com. So if you've got a problem with any rental home or secondary residence you might own, jot that site down, squatterhunters.com, and perhaps Mr. Shelton may have some affiliates or associates in your local area if you're having problems with people moving into your rental homes. You know, back in the day, we had about 100 and well, we had about 50 rental homes at any one time. We acquired and eventually sold, I don't know, somewhere between 125 and 150. And it was rare. And we were on the east side of San Antonio, which is where you might expect this would be a real problem. But we didn't have that many. I mean, we did have a few things. In fact, we had one home where apparently a homeless person, it was before we purchased it. We found out when we purchased it that stack of trash that ran from the front door to the back door, not joking, about waist deep, actually had a body down in there. It was someone that had wandered in and passed away, and I guess over time, new trash layers had been tossed on top of old. But anyway, we were on the news that night, and police had a few questions regarding our closing statement, trying to make sure it occurred after the body presumably deceased. But in any event, sounds like Atlanta is facing a crisis, as it says here in the article, is worse than any other metro area in the country, with around 1,200 homes being taken over, according to the National Rental Home Council trade group. So I guess the 1,200 they referenced earlier was not one subdivision, it was a collection. I would suggest that somewhere like a San Francisco or Austin's headed there. It's not there yet, but I would suggest those areas are where you would see this. I'm a little surprised Atlanta is having this issue. Although, again, it would seem to me that instead of taking five or six vacations over the last 6 months, as Ms. Willis, General Willis, I guess you might call her, has done, maybe she should spend a few hours working on assigning some of her staff to chase out the, or to at least take legal action against these squatters. But she's got to vacation. You know, her life's been threatened, and many other assorted issues that cause her stress. So she's been able to go on cruises and wine tastings, Napa Valley, etc. Good for her. Let's see here. The next article I'll mention is, let's just go to the second one on the list, the Financial State of the Cities, one of my favorite sites. You've heard us talk about it before, truthinaccounting.org. They released this past week their 2024 Financial State of the Cities report. This is good, straight down the middle reporting. They do a great job, and they give you copious details on states and cities in terms of the financial condition that they're in. And this will, I don't know, this won't surprise you. It might shock you. At the end of the fiscal year 2022, 53 cities did not have enough money to pay all of their bills. Now, these are big cities. These don't go down into the small cities. This is the top 75 cities in America. Of the top 75, 53 were running deficits. This means that to claim their budgets were balanced, as is required by law in the 75 cities we're talking about, elected officials have not included the actual cost of the government in their budget calculations and have pushed costs onto future taxpayers. Together, now listen to these numbers. The 75 cities had $307 billion worth of assets available to pay bills. Their debt included unfunded retirement benefit promises. So they're kind of like the U.S. in that regard. They've got a lot of unfunded liabilities. But anyway, $307 billion in assets, $595 billion, almost $600 billion in promises to pay, basically, or bills. So they've got bills that far exceed, almost double what they have assets to cover. Pension debt, which is a favorite with almost every municipality and state government in terms of if they've got deficits, you can rest assured that's going to be number one on the list. Pension debt totaled $176 billion, and other post-employment benefits like retiree health care, that's the big one, totaled $135 billion. So that's about half of that $595 billion. And that's ominous. I mean, when you look at the sources for local and even state governments to collect tax receipts, it's not quite the big table they can set, so to speak, as the Fed or the federal budget is. And this has gotten progressively worse. I can't remember how far back Truth in Accounting has tracked this dynamic, but it's been a ways, and I'm sure they've got most of this out on their website. Speaking of their website at truthandaccounting.org, it's also got, just on the home page, it's just a snippet of some of our favorite numbers off of the U.S. Debt Clock site, but it's, you know, it's just three numbers, and you're not having to put your glasses on, your readers, to see the numbers. And they have the U.S. published national debt, which is now $34,348,000,000,000. Got to make sure I got all my decimal places right there. And then underneath that, they've got three numbers on here. They've got the total published national debt. That's what we actually admit to if you had a balance sheet of the U.S. Government. $34,348,000,000,000. The truth, however, the real number is $166 trillion, folks. And each taxpayer's share is the third number. Now, this, again, this isn't the based on the amount we actually cop to or admit to. This is the truth. This is the real. This includes the unfunded liabilities to date. Each taxpayer's share, $981,000, almost $1 million for each one of us taxpayers. Now, that's not each citizen. It'd be lower, but you're never going to have each citizen actually paying taxes. So they focus on, and when they say taxpayer, pretty certain that's just folks that file a tax return. That doesn't mean they're paying much, if any, tax. But that's shocking. There's just no other way to say it. Each of our share, $981,000. And if you haven't yet, here Nathan goes on his Roth tangent again. It's not a tangent. It's front and center almost every show. If you haven't thought about converting your pre-tax retirement dollars to Roth, you're going to get socked with part of that $981,000 in your golden years. And it may be significantly more than you think it's going to be, because we don't know what the tax rates are going to be 10, 15, 20 years. How long do you anticipate living? If you're in your 50s, you may be surprised to know that the IRS life expectancy tables think you're going to make it another 30 plus years. Males, 85 to 86 age range. Females, 87 to 88. So there's plenty of time for your retirement funds to be pummeled each and every year when you go to take funds out. And of course, you're going to be into the required minimum distributions at some point along the way. And you have no idea how much of that account that you have. If you think you've got $1 million or $2 million, no, you don't. You don't have even close to that once these rates start going up, which will happen somewhere for certain by 2029 or 30, because there's going to be no more discretionary amount of our federal budget to pay 100% of the interest on the debt. Do you think we can make it in this country without printing money for more than a few years, so that we don't have to go to a market and ask, how much interest are you going to demand to buy our, to loan us more money, buy our T-bills? It's going to be very difficult to sell those bonds. And for the folks that will buy them, do you think they're going to do it for, you know, even 5 or 6% like we have now? No way. No way. And it's not just a financial risk in the world we live in today. It's a military risk, because, you know, we owe money to some of our biggest potential enemies, a lot of money is owed to China. And so we've got our work cut out for us. But again, I'm not suggesting that you have to take on the full brunt of this problem. And it's not unpatriotic, by the way, to minimize your tax hit. And remember, the law requires us to pay taxes based on a set of rules, and some of those rules relate to the Roth type of retirement accounts where we don't pay tax on the funds we withdraw, presuming we comply with the other assorted rules. Let's do this. We're past our break time. Let's go ahead and take a break, and we will return momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan@npross.com. Nathan@npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
With big dreams and faded jeans.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. For those of you that would like to connect with me, if you want to do it here real time, you've got a question that you think might fit today's content, you can text me at 713-581-0195, or you can call me, or you can text me after the show throughout the week. I try to monitor that cell phone and be happy to talk to you briefly if you give me a call. Okay, so we were just talking about the horrific fiscal condition of our country, and I can go on, but I'm going to resist the temptation. I think I've said enough. If $1 million a taxpayer doesn't scare you, well, then I don't know what else will. Probably nothing. So, and I realize, oh, some of us old folks may be thinking, well, you know, just like Congress, you know, we won't be around. You know, that used to work when we were 40. It's not going to work now because we're too close to the hurricane that's brewing. We're not going to be able to get out of the way unless you plan on checking out sooner than the IRS life expectancy tables. Let's look at the article that says homeowners stay in their homes longer as now driven by older Americans aging in place. And, you know, it just dawned on me, I forgot to put another article up. I'll do it after the show. There's a Houston developer that's, there's a developer, I believe it also is a Houston-based developer that's getting ready to put up a fairly good size assisted living facility in southeast Houston, and I can tell you we're going to see many, many more such projects. The aging of America has put us in a real shortage of I'm going to say non-Medicaid level type facilities, and I think this one is a private, you know, will be privately paid for, funded, etc. Obviously, long-term health insurance coverage will more than likely cover it. I need to pull that article and put it up because it's nice that we got something like this going up in Houston, but this isn't even the tip of the iceberg in terms of what's needed. But anyway, so this article says that homeowners today stay in their homes twice as long as they did in 2005, driven largely by older Americans aging in place. And, of course, we all have or have had parents. My mother's a good example, where even at age 84, she does not want to leave her home. And as she told me the last time we had a discussion, was actually a discussion that devolved into quite an argument between her and her husband, stepdad, my stepdad, and me, where they let me know that they would rather die in their home, which is a home out in the country, you know, 20 plus acres, don't want to be around neighbors. God forbid anybody might be there to help them, you know, if they had problems. But in any event, you're not going to get them. I don't care how nice the assisted living property is, you're not going to get them in to one of those facilities until one or the other of them passes away. That's what happens. And I just had an uncle pass away a couple weeks ago at age 90. And my 86-year-old aunt, you know, that was her primary caretaker. And so she's got no choice. And thankfully, she's got some children. Some of my cousins are there local, and they've arrange for a very nice facility there, and she's fortunate she has those relatives. And you know, I've talked about in the recent past how I feel very fortunate living in Southeast Asia as I do. My wife is Thai, and you know, if you're going to be old, elderly, or affirmed, which I think all of us eventually check those boxes, there is no better culture than the Asian culture, particularly the Southeast Asian culture, to find yourself in. And so I'm going to suggest that as more and more Americans get put up with all the wokeism and all the other things that are happening in our American culture, you know, you might want to talk to me. If you have thoughts about maybe coming this way, you'll be pleasantly pleased with almost everything. The cost of living, the concept of family, and medical care. Thailand has some of the best medical care in the world at a fraction of the price of the U.S. system. And here they treat you like a human, not a widget or a barcode, more importantly, which last I recall, that's what I remembered from it's been a long time. In fact, they might have even had barcodes back when I was in the hospital last. But now Thailand uses that technology as well. But in any event, they don't worry about scanning every tissue or every napkin quite as much like they do in America. But anyway, so some of the bullet points here on this article shows that, let's see, homeowners hanging on to their houses contributing to the inventory shortage. That was actually the reason I pulled this article. And rising home prices. California homeowners typically stay put the longest, partly because of a state property tax incentive. And it may have something to do with the weather. I think that's probably the biggest reason I can think of to stay put in California. But boy, does it come at a price. They didn't mention the income tax here. That would be a disincentive. Sure not going to be in the incentive category. Anyway, homeowners most often or move most often in relatively affordable southern metros like Louisville and Nashville. The typical U.S. homeowner has spent 11.9 years in their home, up from 6.5 years just two decades ago. That's a pretty significant statistic. Homeowner tenure peaked at 13.4 years in 2020, just when the pandemic set off a moving frenzy, and has declined since then. Anyway, interesting article out on Redfin, and you know, it's again, it explains inventory, which explains prices, which explains why it's harder to buy a single-family rental property now than it's, well, I don't know about than it's ever been, but it sure hadn't been this way in a long time. And when you factor in inflation, these prices are just insanity in terms of what typical single-family rentals are going for. Let's see. Let's do another article before we go to the next break. Let's see. The top U.S. multifamily rent growth markets for Q4 2023. It's an article put out by Arbor Realty. They're a large commercial real estate lender. Some of my clients over the years have taken on debt from Arbor. Some of my clients would tell you they're worse than the mafia. And that, I don't know. I've never borrowed money from Arbor, but I've watched some of the stunts they've pulled with some of my multifamily lead partner clients over the years, and they can be difficult to say the least. But in any event, the top, now again, before I start going down this list, remember we've covered several other data sources on this topic, and I always try to remember to tell you, hey, you know, first of all, we're not average. Nobody's average. We're all actual. And second of all, different data sources yield different results. So Milwaukee is first on the list. Effective rents, $1,306 per unit. Rental growth year on year was 2.0% positive. Let me see, are any of the numbers negative on this list? Doesn't look like they are. They just barely avoided. They've got several under 1%, more than several. Sacramento was number two at 1.9% year-on-year growth in rent. Effective rent was $1,622 a unit. So the ranking here is based on rental growth, not on the rental amount per unit. That makes sense. Third is Denver, with an effective rent of $1,695. That's pretty stout just on the effective rent, as you'll see when we get down to Dallas, which is the 12th city. It's really the only Texas city that made this list. But anyway, the rent growth year-on-year in Denver is 1.3%. Salt Lake City, $1,290 per unit per month, 1.2% year-on-year growth, as was Memphis. Memphis is one of the lower monthly rental amounts at $1,055. Tulsa, I believe, is the only thing less. Tulsa's $807 is the effective rent. But in any event, Central New Jersey is number six on the list. 1.2% year-on-year growth. Kansas City is number seven. Richmond, Virginia is number eight. Tulsa is number nine. Tulsa's effective rent is $807 a month. Year-on-year growth is 0.6%. District of Columbia effective rent is $1,978. That surprises me that it's that low. Maybe, I don't know, it's the highest on this list. I'm just still surprised that it's that low. The rental growth rate year on year is 0.6% there. And then Columbus, Ohio, $1,100 a month effective rent year on year. Growth is 0.5%. And then lastly, Dallas, effective rent of $1,481. Rental growth rate year on year is 0.3%. And if you want to access that report, you can go to our, again, our BeAPlannerShow.com site. Go to the resources tab, go to the news sub tab, sub menu, and you'll see, I don't know, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six down on the current discussion list. Let's see, it's time for another break. Let's go ahead and take it, and we will circle right back here in a few minutes with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
I am a seeker, and you are a teacher. You are a reacher, so reach down. Reach out and lead me. Guide me and keep me in the shelter of your care each day.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle.
BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be A Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and let's see here. The next article I wanted to talk about is the top U.S., let's see, got a report here somewhere. Well, let's talk about the larger properties. I've also got one on the same topic. What are the top markets for small apartments, I believe? Or let's see. Let's do the small multifamily. Multifamily investment trends report Q1 2024. And this is also somewhat reflective of the larger market as well. Let me make sure. Yeah, I did put that on the site. It's the third article down on the current discussion. Let's see. Okay, a couple of the bullets. Small multifamily valuations fell 12.2% year over year. Pretty significant. You know, I'll be curious what the large multifamily valuation decrement is, but 12.2%, you know, the small apartment buildings had not seemingly been as affected, but looks like it kind of caught up. Cap rates ticked up again, rising slightly to reach 5.8%. In the fourth quarter, and debt yields increased for the sixth consecutive quarter, reaching a nine-year high of 9.3%. None of these are helpful. I without going into details on each one, I can tell you that borrowing costs go up. Offers from buyers go down as the cap rate goes up, and as the cap rate goes up, the value of your property goes down. And so these are just the highlights. I mean, there's a good discussion of the small apartment building dynamic if you we'll go pull this article. And TREP is the big multifamily loan syndicator. They syndicate debt, essentially. You know, it's still, multifamily loans are still one of the better quality debt portfolios. You know, the it says here through December, the delinquency rate was just 2.6%, which is the best mark of any commercial property type other than industrial. The industrial is still staying strong, and it's almost like multifamily in the sense that everybody's got to have a place to lay their head at night. Industrial, which includes logistics and warehouse storage, I believe is thrown into that category, if I remember right. When you look at the percentage of product that's transported by boats, trains, and eventually trucks that go to these properties, these massive warehouses, mainly regional type stuff, to drop off or pick up product. It's just staggering. It's unbelievable, the volume. I mean, almost everything we consumers touch spends time on one or more of those transportation modes of transportation, if not all three. However, getting back to small multifamily, despite elevated interest rates, multifamily had a strong quarter, according to TREP. The delinquency rate I already mentioned stood at 2.6%. However, the economic environment continues to face challenges. Lending standards for small multifamily properties remain tight, and while cap rates ticked up in the fourth quarter, the combination of market conditions and historical precedent suggests they may still rise further. And by the way, that's not just the small apartment market. That's going on regardless what size the properties are. And let's say, looking ahead, financial markets expect the Federal Reserve will begin loosening its monetary tightening policy by its May 2024 meeting. When it begins doing so, the normalization of multifamily sector conditions will likely follow closely behind. I wouldn't give much credence to that statement. If the Fed gets another jobs report like the one we got two Fridays ago, good luck seeing any rate cuts anytime soon. And I would tell you the last quarter of 2024. This article was just published earlier this month, so I'm not sure which tea leaves they're reading, but it may have been before that jobs report came out. In terms of the lending volume, let's see, 2022, 901 billion, year end 2022 estimate of new family or multifamily lending volume on loans with original balances between $1 million and $9 million, including loans for apartment building sales and refinancing, represented a modest deceleration from 2021's record high of $102 billion. I said $901 billion. 90.1. I got to push the glasses up my nose there a bit. I'm sorry. I thought that sounded like a lot for 1 year on multifamily. Last year, however, the small multifamily originations market fully reset. The 2023 estimate was $40.7 billion, marking the slowest year for new originations since 2012. That I'm not surprised, because it seemed to me just generally the activity, the volume of activity was slower. I've been tracking small apartment buildings now for at least the last year, thinking that, that's where we need to start considering properties with our clients more so than the big, larger 300, 400 unit transactions. The 8 to 50 market seems to me like it's got more throughput in terms of profit, because you don't see near the fees charged by those that are undertaking those transactions, if at all. You may have one person that can buy a 20 unit and hire a property management company for, I don't know, anywhere from 2 to 5%, depending on the property, and that's essentially all that leaks out compared to the big transactions. But in any event, let's see, we've got just a minute left. Let me take a quick look here at the National Multifamily Report for large multifamily. I'll at least cover some bullets here if I can get this up. The average multifamily asking rent, again, average, was $1,710 in January of 2024, up 0.5% year over year. Well, we just went through the other report that showed it by city. That was a different source. This is Multi-Housing News, and this article, I'm not sure who, this is the Yardi Index, so it's another software company that tracks the data of their customers running their apartment property management softwares. But in any event, let's see here. They mentioned some of the same names. On a year-over-year basis through January, rent growth remained highest in the Northeast and Midwest, led by New York, New Jersey, Columbus, Kansas City, Indianapolis. Those names, at least a couple of those, were on the Redfin, I believe it was Redfin, or maybe, no, it was the Arbor report. On a monthly basis, national rents were flat in January. Renter by necessity rents included up, inched up 0.1% and remained unchanged in the lifestyle segment, higher end. Okay, we're at the end of the show. We hope you enjoyed the content this week, and we will return this coming Friday at 11 a.m. Look forward to you joining us. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.